I'm Robbie, the site manager. Everyone here knows me. But when they ask me, how was your weekend? They're surprised when I say, I'm getting paid, loading a helicopter on board a transport plane as an RAF reserve. I'm in charge of making sure it's loaded correctly. If it isn't, the plane can't fly. Knowing the pilot needs my okay before takeoff, that's a special feeling.
Make your spare time count with over 40 roles. Commit only 27 days a year. Search RAF Reserves.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock.
Oh, that was really interesting, mate. Yeah.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Fighting Cock, The Extra Inch. And my name's Windy. Today I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, Nathan Clark.
All right, mate, how's it going?
Don't know why I dropped your surname in there. Just seemed to roll off the tongue somehow. I think it's because of your new Twitter.
It's Twitter handle. Brand power.
Brand power, exactly. You're Darren Browning me. I mean, we were going to do a podcast about journalism, and we still plan to this month, but that kind of got put back because various schedules couldn't be matched up. So we're going to fill the gaps with a mid-season review today. So where we normally would do a kind of thematic evergreen podcast, I think today is going to be a bit more of a look back at what's happened so far and probably referring to some recent games because they're fresh in our memories. So for those who are listening in the future, today's the 19th of December. We're not far before Christmas. And we've just played Man City and lost 4-1 pretty heavily and unpleasantly. And so it might be slightly downbeat. And there are a few questions about that game, not least the first one we've got. But, I mean, we'll talk about the season so far quite broadly. So, guys, what's gone well so far? Let's try and start on an upbeat note.
Well, I think, of course, the best thing that to come out of this season was our Champions League campaign, where last year we laboured and we almost looked like we weren't focused on it. This year we went into it with a proper desire right from the very first game. And we set our stall out and we beat Dortmund in our first match when the Wembley curse thing was still something on our minds. And we put them to bed quite convincingly. And then from there, throughout the whole qualifying, I mean, we got more points than any other team in the group stages. So that's a big tick. That's a big success.
What's been the difference this year with the Champions League campaign? Well, we were so poor last year and there were rotation issues, but what's been the main difference this year for you?
I think we've been a little bit lucky that Real Madrid aren't quite what they were last season, and Dortmund, even though they had a promising start to the season, ended up being a little bit shaky. And what helped us a lot as well is Dortmund dropping points early to Apoel, which all of a sudden opened up a gap for us. And other than that, we've been pretty good on the counter-attack, which has helped us.
Yeah, that's the main thing for me, is that we've developed this sort of medium block and counter-attack game, which we've been able to use when we come up against teams who want to attack, like Real Madrid, like Dortmund, and also Liverpool in the league, where we've been able to make them play the football.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. I think that the way we adapted to Champions League football, either through pre-planning or just in the game itself, and I'm still not convinced either way on that. I think it's been a joy to behold compared to last year. I was sort of looking at some fairly rudimentary stats, but our possession in the league compared to the Champions League, it's down 10% in the Champions League, basically. 58.7% possession we're averaging in the Premier League games this year so far. 47.3% in the Champions League. That's a fairly notable difference and shows that we're not so bothered about having the ball, or perhaps just the fact that the teams we've been up against are very much possession based as well.
And I think it kind of helps us that we haven't been that good with the ball. We've struggled to break down teams, so I think it kind of played into our hands not having to dictate the play and try and find openings, and working on the counters helped us. And I think Son's form this year, especially in the Champions League, has been great. He's been a proper attacking threat, whereas players like Ali and stuff haven't quite matched their levels from last season.
Do you feel like we've been a bit more clinical in those matches as well? And I'm wondering whether perhaps there's something to be said for the team appearing more focused in Champions League matches. They know they're not going to get so many chances, so when they do come along, they make the most of them. We've seen Son and Kane score from ridiculous angles in ways that they probably haven't scored so frequently in Premier League matches. And Is that to do with just taking the chances as they come? Is it to do with slight more focus, as I say?
I think the style of play sort of lends itself to that attitude and application mentality as well, in that you know that this is your chance, that you've been defending as a unit, and with that there's a camaraderie, and then when you get your chance, when you're on your break, you know that this is the time, you've got to put it away, rather than a possession game when you know you're going to have 20 half chances and you've got to try and make something of that.
So who have been the stars so far this season for you guys? I mean, it's easy to sort of say Harry Kane straight off the bat because he's, well, he's contributed a ridiculous number of goals in our total goals, 12 out of 31, which is only below Rooney in comparison with other clubs' players.
Which is strange because I don't think Harry Kane's had that great a season. He's been wasteful. He's missed a lot of chances this season. And maybe this is more to do with the fact that the team isn't performing as well. He seems to be coming too deep for me to get the ball and almost trying to play, start playmaking, which I don't think suits him. There was an argument before that he was more of a number 10 than a 9, whereas for me, I've always seen Harry Kane as a number 9, as a battering ram, but with a bit of guile about him. So I don't like the fact that he keeps having to come deep and get the ball. So I wouldn't say he's been our star performer. For me, the biggest surprise has been Sanchez. Davinson Sanchez has arrived from a league which gets mocked because it's pretty weak, and he's just looked at home. He's just settled in beautifully. Sometimes as a foreigner, I mean, he's had 1 year in Holland. Before that, he was playing in Colombia, and the guy just doesn't. He looks like he's been here all his life.
He looks close to par with Vertonghen and Alderweireld, which is a ridiculously high standard. I've been so impressed. My scepticism with him when he was coming in was his passing game. But at first, we sort of worked our way around that by using him in the middle, and all he does is pass sideways. And since then, he's progressed as well in his ability to play forward ball. So, yeah, I'm completely blown away by him.
Yeah, he's not a defender who uses his strength and his speed to get out of trouble. Of course, he has that in him, but his position is a lot better than I gave him credit for when he first joined. I can maybe think of two mistakes he's made this year. One was the West Brom goal, which even that was a little bit unfortunate, and of course the red card against Watford, which now looking back has cost us quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that moment in hindsight, it was so needless. He didn't need to do it. We've been on a downward spiral pretty much since, and part of that's because he hasn't been there, because he's so prominent in our team now, and he's so crucial to the way we've been playing this year in terms of him, his pace and a reading of the game allowing us to play a bit higher. I think he's an exceptional signing. I think we paid a ridiculous fee for him in terms of what we'd previously paid for players, but not ridiculous in terms of his worth or the market as it stands now.
No, I mean, if we sold him today, we'd 60 upwards, yeah, up for him easy. And you can see how Dyer's performed recently in centre-back, and the difference between Dyer and Davinson, there's a massive difference between them. Davinson is a top-class centre-back.
One thing I expected from him that I haven't seen much of is the ability to run forward with the ball. I'd read a few things saying that he's quite good at kind of popping into midfield and playmaking, almost not with kind of incisive forward passes, but just finding the right man in space,
like kind of a Tonga movement.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing if he can add that to his game in the second half of this season and the seasons to come.
I think we've seen his technical ability on the ball in terms of his ability to resist pressure,
yeah,
and just play a neat game. So I don't think it's completely missing from his game. One player I would add to the who's playing well list is, especially recently, is Son. I don't necessarily think that he's taken a step up this season. I think that it's as much about the context of the team and what the team needs. But he's coming in and he's doing his job consistently. I've been very impressed with him.
Yeah, I agree.
I love Son. I think he's one of the most underrated players in the league. I think he's definitely our most underrated player. I think people take his goals and assists for granted, but it's not just that. It's his movement off the ball, how relentless he is when attacking the fullback, and it has the effect that eventually the fullback knows that he's going to get the better of him, and it puts them on the back foot and they don't know quite how to defend against him, in a similar way to Wilfried Zaha's done with Palace. If you scare a torment a defender that much throughout the game, you eventually get your way over them, and he's done that a number of times already.
If I have one complaint to make about Son, it's that he's not ruthless enough in his personality. He seems to be the easy substitution and the easy player to drop, which I don't like. that if there's a problem with the team, he's the first one to get yanked, whereas someone like Eriksen, Ali, will be given that 10-15 minutes longer than Son. And also, when everybody's fit, despite how good Son's playing, he's the one that sits on the bench. We don't see Dele Alli ever on the bench.
And I think that's basically why he's underrated, is because at the end of the day, he isn't first 11 if everyone's fit. But you can still rate him because he's a brilliant 12th player and one of the best in the league for that regard.
He's one of those kind of players that you want to ride their form. When they're in it, just use them. Yeah. Use them until they're knackered and then bench them. Because he goes on sort of streaks, doesn't he, with his goals. Yeah, really impressed with Son this year.
Definitely one of the players who benefited from Lamella being out for a year. He was the one who really stepped up and filled that gap.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice to have Lamella back. I'm sure we'll come into that at some point. Any other players you want to kind of mention that you think have stood out? I mean, I feel like if we were recording this 6 weeks ago, then Harry Winks would have got a mention, but he's had a few iffy performances. I know Bardi's not his greatest fan at the moment.
Well, I mean, we've got questions on Harry Winks later, and I'll express my feelings on him.
No worries. So what's not gone so well this year? I mean, I would start off with the League Cup exit, which is a damp squib, say the least.
Yeah, I mean, especially being 2-0 up. But if your manager's saying it's not important, then that kind of does slip into the player's mentality. And football players are kids. Give them an opportunity to not perform or not need to perform, and they invariably don't perform.
What do you think of this kind of theory that Spurs need to win a trophy?
I mean, you always need each team needs to be able to pin their success on something. It's very rare you'll get a team like maybe Brazil 82, that the greatest team in the world, but they didn't win anything. They have to be exceptional team for them to be able to still stand out without having won something. Unfortunately, I think Pochettino, for his legacy, he does need a trophy eventually, because you can't keep saying about progression, second, third places. There has to be some kind of tangible product at the end of it, unfortunately.
I would say look at Arsenal and how for 10 years they didn't win a trophy. Everyone brought up trophies. Why aren't we winning trophies? And then they won 3 FA Cups in 4 years. And you know what? They still hate him. They still want him out. He's still a disgrace. He's still ruined the club.
I think you can never use Arsenal as a measuring stick about normal football
clubs. That's true. They're certainly not usual fans, are they?
No.
Fair points. Yeah, I kind of agree, actually, that Arsenal was a good comparison in this sense. I kind of see it from a fan perspective as well, of kind of looking back at the history books and wanting something to be noted down about this team because they might otherwise be forgotten. But I'm all for Poch prioritising the league and Champions League at this point, because they're the two most important competitions we're in.
Yeah, and I do agree with that, but it would be nice to be able to bookmark this team, this kind of generation, because I think part of the problem we're having at the moment is I got a funny feeling this could be an end of a little cycle here, where we've had 3 years of progression, and all of a sudden we've hit a little bit of sticky form, and it would be nice to kind of end this kind of period with a trophy at the end of it.
So what's brought that form about? What do you feel's gone wrong compared to last year?
We've basically had the same attacking four now for a while. Teams have worked out how to stop us. We've regressed in certain areas in the fullbacks. We've, through injuries and through selling players, we've weakened. Our midfield has dropped off in performance levels. Dembele is not the player that he was. And when we've got no Wanyama, we've had no Lamella. And unfortunately, we keep having to flog Kane, Eriksen and Ali. They have to keep producing, and they're not. And that's where our problems lay.
Yeah, I would say predominantly injuries. I think that we've had a huge injury crisis this season, and it's been sort of undiscussed, unseen, because we do have now some moderate depth to the squad. But still, when you're missing your best players and you're missing the ability to play a back three, you're missing how you build the ball out the back, it completely changes the way you play. And that, in combination with moving to Wembley, where it's harder to play a possession game because of the size of the pitch, because of the softness of the turf, it's been a horrible combination, basically. And we do start season slow, so maybe we'll come into something now. I'm a little optimistic, more so than most Spurs fans at the moment, it seems.
So talking about the idea that we've flogged these front four and they're now struggling for form and fitness, we have a question from Serbiad on Twitter who says, does Eriksen deserve a place in our starting 11 as he seems to have rediscovered his disappearing act?
I mean, if you don't play Eriksen, who are you going to play? That's the fundamental problem. I wrote a blog recently about that. I called it the Poch Cartel, where he's kind of built this group of players now. This is his team, and he's got nowhere else to go. He's got only those players who are totally loyal to him, whereas everyone else has been pushed aside. Bentaleb's, other players like that, other options. He doesn't want at the club because, one, they're a distraction, but now, unfortunately, he's got nowhere else to turn. So Eriksen has to play because we don't have anyone else.
Eriksen's great. I think he's an incredible player. And I think that the fact that we are criticising Eriksen and we're criticising Dele at the same time, and even saying Harry Kane's a bit off, is no coincidence. I do think it is that we aren't building the way we like to because of injuries, because of Wembley and various things. And I am happy to give him a pass because I know that the quality is there. I'm not worried about his performances or his mentality.
Yeah, I would like it noted that I'm not calling out Eriksen. I'm not saying Eriksen is a bad player. Eriksen remains a great player. But we've seen throughout his career at Spurs, he does have moments and he does have periods where he does drop off.
I don't feel we've given him adequate rest this season. I think he's played too many minutes, particularly that run where he ended up playing those two very, very intense games for Denmark well. It was a really tough period. His performances for Spurs dropped considerably throughout that. And had Lamela been back, say, a month sooner, he may have got a couple of rests and we may have got the best out of him, and then as a result the best out of the team, because when Eriksen's not playing well, we struggle to play well. Likewise Dembele, I think we've really suffered with Dembele's
old age,
hips and knees. I mean, he looks a shadow of his former self, to the point where I don't think Dembele should be starting too many games these days.
There is something as well which people aren't thinking about, is the World Cup is looming, and for a player like Eriksen, this might be his one and only opportunity to play at a World Cup. And I think historically, if you look back, there's always certain individuals that will kind of drop off a little bit and not give 100% in order to be fresh for their country. If his country is going to have any hope in getting through the group stages, it's going to be on him. So I think for him, probably our league campaign might come second to what he's thinking about this summer.
That's a fair point.
And I don't hold it against him. I think it's very easy to get upset at a player who's holding out for his national team, but you'd probably do the same if you were them.
Yeah, apart from Harry Kane, he'll kill himself for national team and club team.
Yeah. And we have a question from Greg Jenner on Twitter, who says, Lloris's kicking and distribution. The City game highlighted this area. What's the advantage of playing it out of the back against a furiously intense opposition press? And I guess this ties into what we were saying earlier with the... the City game being so fresh in our memories and feeling a bit downbeat at the moment after that match. I mean, obviously we saw a direct comparison with the two goalkeepers, one who's a master of distribution and one who's simply not. So what do you think, Nath?
The advantage of playing out through the pressure is that it leaves a load of space behind, and then you can essentially counter-attack into that space without ever having lost the ball. And that's a great thing to do if you can do it. It becomes a question of when is the right time to do it. And I can understand why people would say the City game, for example, or this game or that game was not the occasion to do it.
Bardi, do you have a heart attack every time the ball goes to Lloris?
No, I don't, because he very rarely makes a mistake, but it very rarely leads to anything either, other than like an opposition throw-in. It would be nice if we could have a goalkeeper that could pass out, but, you know, Lloris is a top-quality goalkeeper, but he's not really the goalkeeper we need, but I give Lloris a pass as well, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, you have to give Lloris a pass because of his general quality. When he first came in under AVB, he very much seemed like the keeper from the future with his sweeping and the way he came out.
Yeah.
And it seems like incredibly quickly the modern game has not only caught up with him, but then put him in a situation where his passing seems a little outdated. And that speaks less to Lloris than it does to the development of football.
Yeah, I have to agree 100% with that. When he arrived, he was like a phenomenon because he would come out and clear the ball. Now you've got goalkeepers coming out and not clearing the ball, but passing the ball. And that's where the game has moved on and Lloris hasn't.
Do you think we take him for granted a little? Because we've got so used to that sweeping. I think he covers so much space behind our back three or four.
I think there's been a little bit of a drop-off in performance from him. There was a crazy stat in the Champions League where the last 10 shots on target were all goals that he conceded. I think he's starting to make errors now, even in his sweeping. I think it was against West Brom, maybe, where he came rushing out and he got beaten to the ball. No, was that? I think so. Anyway, I think it was Lloris. So there are moments where he's looked a little bit fallible, but he's still a good goalkeeper.
What do we make of the nutmeg for City's fourth goal? straight through him.
Happens.
It happens, I'm willing to give him a pass on
that. Best goalkeepers in the world getting nutmegged.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think Lloris is great generally. I don't think we'd get a better goalkeeper if we tried. So, yeah, it's one of those things. It would be nice to have a goalkeeper that could play those long passes with accuracy. But as long as, like you say, he keeps it relatively safe, he doesn't make too many mistakes. And when they're a mistake, it's a throw-in rather than anything more serious, then that's fine.
Of course, if we had a goalkeeper who could pass, that would be what we want, really. So I think that was where we would lead to. And
We do have a goalkeeper who can pass in Michel Vorm, but he can't
stop the ball.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
So the areas for improvement as we go through the season. We've got a question from Walker0104 on Twitter. What's going on with our fullbacks this year? This time last season, we had four that you could rely on in all situations. Now Davies is the only safe pair of hands. Rose is not fit, Trippier is inconsistent, and Aurier has not settled. What do you think about the fullbacks? I feel like we've regressed at fullback, but there's a lot of room for improvement, and I expect to see that throughout the season.
I mean, Kieran Trippier, I wouldn't say he's inconsistent. Kieran Trippier is Kieran Trippier. I think he's kind of reached his level. He's not the fullback we need. I almost said the Superman quote or whatever it is. He's not the fullback we need, but he's the fullback we got. It was that Batman.
Batman.
It's deserved, but there you go.
But you know, he lacks everything that we need in a fullback, unfortunately. And where he does okay against the weaker teams is fine, but we cannot claim to be like a challenging team with Kieran Trippier at right back. That has to change.
I think the Aurier situation proves a bit of a warning for the Rose situation, is that it's easy right now to say, well, Rose has done this, he's a bit of a dick, he's out of form, let's get rid of him and bring Sessegnon in. Well, that is sort of the mentality we've had with Walker and Aurier, and we've seen the prices that Aurier, we're halfway through the season and he hasn't settled. And although he has the ability to replicate Walker's performances, we've yet to see that, and it's had a significant effect on our performance as a team.
It's kind of frustrating for me as a youth watcher, because we've got a fullback there, Walker Peters, who's so well set to be a Pochettino fullback, and he's barely had a look in. He was man of the match in his debut. Admittedly, I didn't think he was the best player in our team, but he was awarded the man of the match award. It's a bit of a sickener to see him kind of waiting in the wings whilst we struggle on with Trippier and an underperforming Aurier.
Yeah, I mean, fullbacks don't need to be the greatest defenders in the world at the moment, but they have to be physically capable of getting up and down. And Trippier is in that halfway house where he's not the greatest defender and he's not the greatest attacker. And plenty of times you see him, he seems to be constantly chasing forward or running backwards. He's never where he should be. But while I was thinking about fullbacks and just reading a little bit on Google, I found this really interesting anecdote. And Roy Hodgson, that great luminary of football and that great progressive thinker, in 1996, when he was the manager of Inter Milan, he actually sold Roberto Carlos because he didn't know where to play him. So he spent like half a season playing Roberto Carlos at left wing, centre midfield, and he just didn't trust him as a left back and sold him to Real Madrid. And then, you know, the rest is history. He went on to win three Champions Leagues, a World Cup and everything.
That's amazing. So, I guess in a way it's similar to the situation we had with Christian Ziga. We didn't quite know where to play him. He was a wing back, but we weren't always playing a back three.
Yep.
And so do you play him at left back and accept that his defending's not great, or do you play him in midfield?
Which is why we should actually sell Danny Rose and buy Gareth Bale and put Gareth Bale back at left back and let's complete the circle and put him there. I think he'd be an amazing left back. I mean, do you remember the Arsenal game where we had Danny Rose as left wing and Bale at left back? You know, we'd beat Arsenal. That was a good Arsenal team.
Crazy. I mean, it's weird to think that was... Actually, you know, Rose wasn't playing left wing that game. He played at right wing.
Rose, really?
Yeah, he made his debut at right wing, I think.
Okay.
But going back to Aurier briefly, I actually really like him. I think there's a lot of potential there. I like the way... It sounds odd, but I like the way his body position is. I think it allows him to beat his man fairly consistently. I think he clearly is lacking rhythm. He hasn't had too many games in a row, so he kind of, every time he comes in, it's like he's starting from scratch again. Mm-hmm. But he seems to be pretty good in the final third. Certainly his decision making in the final third compared to Trippier's is better. I think Trippier will generally just try and whip a cross in as early as possible, because that's his game. He's a great crosser, but it's a low percentage chance creation thing. Aurier will try and pick a pass, he'll try and beat his man and hit the byline and cut one back, and I think that's a much better way to score a goal.
And under pressure, when he's pressed, he's quite comfortable cutting inside on his left foot to get out of trouble as well, instead of just booting it out. There's a lot to like about him. Yes, he's a bit naive and he'll maybe lunge into a tackle. I mean, people point to the West Ham game where he got sent off as like, oh, he's a bit... But, you know, players do get sent off. I think he needs to be playing. The only way he's going to find form and find his rhythm is by playing regularly. And I think that should start immediately.
He got quite a lot of criticism against Brighton because he got rolled a couple of times by Solly March when he came on. I didn't have too much of a problem with him trying to win the ball high up because I thought that was kind of in keeping with what Spurs do. And against Brighton, you can take those chances because generally they're not going to put them away. And I think actually that's probably what Poch wants to see more of, fullbacks who are willing to take a chance and not dive in, you know, and commit yourself fully, but to try and win the ball on the halfway line or beyond, and that can actually be quite a progressive thing.
I don't think that we can doubt his ability or at least his potential, only the performances he's given us so far. And with that comes the question, how would he be playing if he had been brought earlier and had a full pre-season with the team?
Sorry, Nate.
So, and we save some money by waiting until the end of the window to purchase him, but how much do we essentially lose in return by having a player who's taken now, you know, 4 or 5 months to sell in?
Yeah, so exactly. So along those lines, do we need to spend some money on fullbacks in January? We've got a question from Spurs Fandom who said, what is our best fullback combination and what are the relative advantages of each pairing? But I guess we don't even know who our fullbacks are going to be come the end of January, because for all we know, Rose might go. Maybe we'll get the offer that will take Rose away. He certainly doesn't seem as committed as he once did.
I would play Rose and Aurier every game until... it doesn't work. I mean, Rose, even against Man City, I thought for the faults, I quite liked the way he played. I quite liked the way he tried to get forward. He got back, put some blocks in. Far more dynamic than Davies has been against Arsenal. I thought Davies was weak. He didn't offer us anything. I would play Rose and Aurier until they find a rhythm. I mean, the alternatives are Davies, who's fine, or Trippier, who's terrible. So I would play those two.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, we're looking at overall quality versus form, where the two lesser fullbacks are the two fullbacks who are performing better at the moment. So it's hard to give a definitive answer.
Would you be looking to sign a future Rose replacement, i.e. someone like Sessegnon or, I don't know, Ben Chilwell, who's playing well for Leicester?
I don't know. Every time I look at Ben Chilwell, I've seen him shank the ball out quite often. I'm not too sure on him. And Sessegnon, I haven't seen enough.
So I'm really, really big on Sessegnon. He's an incredibly talented player, and I think if you want him to play left back or left wing back, you need to buy him sooner rather than later, because he's getting a lot of games at left wing, and it would be like trying to play Gareth Bale at left wing back again. So the time is now for Sessegnon, really.
That's the thing. With a player that talented in the Championship, they will get played higher up the pitch because they can do damage, whereas in the Premier League, he could drop back and be fine. But like you say, the defensive side of his game might be trained out of him before too long, so we need to get in there and make him ours. But in terms of other January business, we have various questions. Chopping Guy on Twitter says, how much do we actually need transfers in against players actually coming back from injury to be the difference makers?
I mean, we need, I don't know whether it can be this January or whether we have to wait for the summer, but we need an alternative to Dembele. Unfortunately, I think he's fading quickly, and we need somebody in there. Harry Winks is unable to cope without someone like Dembele alongside him, so we need that. This summer, we have to address the Dembele replacement. That's the biggest question mark in our team.
I would be a little less harsh on Harry Winks, but I do think that is the area to focus on. I think it's very hard, having come this far in the season, and say, well, actually, our squad is fine when we've had deficiencies in these areas and these players are tired, but the fact that Lamela has come back, the fact that Wanyama's going to come back, Alderweireld's going to come back, I do think we have a decent squad. I think we've been crying out for a winger for ages, and suddenly Son has proven himself in that role. We've been crying out for depth for Eriksen for ages, and suddenly Lamela's fulfilling that role. So I think the squad is a lot better than it looks at the moment. And yeah, that Dembele role is sort of really the key. And that is probably why Pochettino seems to have an interest in Barkley, who can maybe perform that role and also maybe play as a 10 as well. So he likes that sort of positional versatility in his players.
Particularly if he's playing a 3-5-2, which we've kind of played a fair amount this year. I don't love it. I think partly he's done it to accommodate Sissoko, because he doesn't seem to trust Sissoko in a two-man midfield, but also doesn't want him to play fully as part of the three in the 3-4-3. So we've kind of got this middle ground where we've had Winks or Dembele as the pivot, and then Eriksen and Sissoko, or Ali and Sissoko, either side of the pivot. I'm not convinced it's the way forward for Spurs. I don't think it's getting the best out of many of our players. What have you guys made of that slight, subtle change?
The 3-5-2 we've seen works really well when we're playing on the counter-attack, as we did against Liverpool and against European sides. But I think when we dominate the ball, we're better off in a 3-4-3. And I think that we will return to that when we've got the likes of Wanyama and Aduero back on the team. Mm.
So it's papering over the injuries, you think?
Yeah, basically. And if you want to use Sissoko for his ability to play a lot of minutes, to cover a lot of ground, to be positionally versatile, then you accommodate to him by playing a three-man midfield. So that makes sense in those particular cases. But I still think 3-4-3 will be our formation going forward.
We haven't mentioned Sissoko yet. What have you made of him so far this year? It feels like kicking a puppy.
It does a bit. He's good on the counter-attack, and he can absorb a lot of minutes, and he works really hard now, but he's still a technically very limited player. And as we saw against Arsenal, for example, he really struggled in that situation. Controlling the ball under pressure and trying to be creative, it just doesn't suit him at all. So he has a role in the squad as to be this player who can run with the ball, to be this player who can absorb minutes. But we paid $30 million for him, and he's on huge wages to fulfil a role that could maybe be played by a youth player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a blunt instrument. He's like not even a very useful blunt instrument. He's like a wooden mallet, which is only really good for putting like tent pegs in. But he gets around the pitch. He presses. He counter-attacks in the way. You know, he gets the ball and runs straight. But he's a useful player. But the moment he starts against a team like Arsenal, I get nervous. And it's kind of been proven that he's not great.
I think it's just shown up how much we've missed Wanyama as well.
For sure.
I mean, that guy was so criminally underrated at times last year. I think he held the midfield together, and I think his absence has been felt hugely. I think he can do a lot in midfield that Dembele does, and that's why I'm not so convinced that we've got to address the Dembele problem. I think Wanyama's got potential to do a lot of that for us, and I think with Wanyama alongside him, Harry Winks will become twice the player, because Winks is not a natural defensive midfielder. That's never been his game. He's fitting in there. He's doing his best for the team. He reads the game really nicely, but he's not combative enough to do that role. He's not wise enough positionally to do that role. He's more of a kind of link man. He uses the ball brilliantly. He can run with the ball. And I think he needs to be alongside a more naturally defensive player.
Yeah, I think we're all a little bit kind of like, we didn't realise how big a loss Wanyama was going to be. I think he played against Chelsea, didn't play great, got injured, and we kind of like brushed it off. Oh, we'll be OK. And it's been proven that we haven't been OK without him.
I think it's the combination of losing Wanyama and also Dyer having to go back into defence that has caused us so many problems, because we essentially don't have a number six now starting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Dyer's performances in midfield were looking pretty good at the start of the year. When he dropped back, less so. I mean, he's been okay at times in centre-back. I think he's been very good in some games at centre-back, but he's also had a few really ropey performances where none of his strengths have been accentuated and all of his weaknesses have been clearly highlighted.
Yeah.
I'm Robbie, the site manager. Everyone here knows me. But when they ask me, how was your weekend? They're surprised when I say, I'm getting paid, loading a helicopter on board a transport plane as an RAF reserve. I'm in charge of making sure it's loaded correctly. If it isn't, the plane can't fly. Knowing the pilot needs my OK before takeoff, that's a special feeling.
Make your spare time count with over 40 roles. Commit only 27 days a year. Search RAF Reserves.
His attempted back heel against Man City on the edge of his area was ridiculous, and the missed interception towards the end was bad. And it just shows, I don't think he seems to be right mentally. He hasn't had a great season. He's been pushed around where he's going to play here. He hasn't really had a settled role, and plus there was the links with Man United. I think he needs to I think he needs to maybe not play, but it's unfortunate he has to play at the moment. You've got no other option.
He's basically becoming our Phil Jones, just the guy that fills in and does a job.
Yeah, I think he's suffering from being so versatile at the moment that he's now, I don't know how old he is, 23, 24 now?
Yeah, I think he's 24.
So he's getting to the stage now where he should be nailed on, and we're still arguing whether or not he's a better midfielder or defender.
So any other transfers, anyone else you kind of have your eye on, or do you think we should be selling many players?
Oh, selling? No, I don't think so. I don't think there's really anyone. No, we shouldn't sell anybody, but it's the same old thing. We need a proper alternative to Kane. We need someone else, an attacking option, whether it be Zaha or somebody else like that. And we do need to address the fact that we're probably going to lose Danny Rose.
Yeah, that's how I agree with that, yeah. Basically.
So following on from the January transfer window, let's say we have a reasonable window, we sign a couple of players. What would be your aims for the rest of the season? I'm thinking already I'm liking the look of the FA Cup, the draw against AFC Wimbledon, and not only that, but Premier League clubs being drawn against each other. Mm-hmm. So a bit of a route being potentially paved out. I mean, it would be lovely. I'd love to have a good FA Cup run. But we're also in the Champions League. We've qualified in the Champions League, which is incredibly exciting.
Yeah, but the Champions League is two more matches. You know, worst case scenario, we have two games. We'll know after we've played Juventus away where we are. I mean, we should obviously go all out for that. But if we get smashed 4-0, then it's kind of like, OK, now we refocus back on the league. The Champions League, we're in a position where we can take it two games at a time. And especially the early stages of knockout rounds, there's so many weeks between them because they like to get as many on TV as possible, that we can rotate and we'll be okay.
Yeah, I agree with Pochettino's prioritisation of the Champions League first, then the Premier League and then the FA Cup. I am fairly optimistic that we can finish in the top four again. I don't think it's going to be that hard a push. I know obviously we're outside of it right this moment, but I think that will come around for us.
And how about kind of, we haven't really spoken about on-the-pitch improvements we want to see. We spoke a bit about the fullbacks, but one kind of fairly obvious area which we can quite easily improve, and we've spoken about before, is set pieces. And Mark Lynch, one on Twitter, said, "What is going on with our set pieces? Attacking and defending both seem areas we can improve upon."
I read two articles on this today. One was by Greg Bukowski on The Guardian earlier this year, where he said only 3% of corners are scored, so what's the point in dealing with it? But then I read something by @MixNuts on Twitter, at StatsBomb, and Nathan's nodding, so I guess he might have read it as well, where he properly kind of looked at set pieces and the value that comes from it. And he cited Alex Ferguson's last two teams at Man United, which were ageing, which hadn't been invested in well, and Ferguson started really focusing on set pieces and started scoring 10 to 15 extra goals a season. And I don't know if you guys remember, Evra all of a sudden starts scoring a shitload of headers. And that's kind of proof that if you focus and if you really practice them, it is like signing an extra striker.
Yeah, I put together a video because we had 10 corners against Crystal Palace, and I looked over all 10 corners against Crystal Palace, and essentially there are no plans at play. There's no plotting, there's no organisation. We just whip it in and see what happens. And there's a lot of potential there to put some time in there and get some goals out of it.
I mean, look at how many goals Man City are scoring from set pieces. And the season Liverpool nearly won the league, they would often break the deadlock with a set piece. And then the moment they're in the lead, their counter-attacking style came out and it suited them. And City as well, two set piece goals against United, one against us, which kind of changed the whole dynamic of the match. And I think we need to start focusing on this properly, because there's you know, stats are proving that there are ways to, this is a genuine way to win a game.
Yeah, and while we are at the moment better in transition than we are playing possession football, that first goal is so huge. Mm-hmm. If you can get that goal like City did with a set piece, you change the game completely.
And the Stoke match, for example, changed. We scored early, and that just proves that against these kind of weaker teams, if we get the early goal, they have to change their system, and then we will destroy most teams on the counter.
Do you get as annoyed as I do with Kane attempting knuckleball free kicks? I don't know why he's still attempting to strike them with that particular technique. I just think someone just needs to step up and curl one towards the corner, because that seems I know that makes it easier to save, but it just seems so much easier to score in that way than these knuckleball efforts that either fly miles over or hit the wall.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I can't. The Pjanic at Juventus, he's a curler. He's one of the best free kick takers, and he curls them. There's not really many regular kind of knuckleball free kick specialists. Ronaldo, he's scored like one, maybe one in 90.
It seems a bit of a fad to me, and I wish we'd just go back to the simple get it up and over the wall into the far corner.
It's Gareth Bale's fault because he scored about 10 for us in the season. It's crazy, isn't it? I think when the ball is really far out and central, and there's a huge distance for it to dip, then that makes sense. He's hit the crossbar a couple of times doing that, but I do think the closer one should be curled. And then you point to Eriksen and say, well, he's been curling them for ages and he hasn't scored one in years. But we know that his ability to put the ball there is present.
Yeah, and there are other options in the team. We've seen Dier score free kicks. We know that he's capable. I actually think Ben Davies would probably be a reasonable free kick taker. I think he's very accurate with his sort of crossing, certainly. And I'd like to think that he's got a good striking technique which can be relied upon. And I think Harry Winks would actually have a reasonable shooting technique as well from free kick range. But the other thing is the number of players in our team that are, in theory, really good at attacking the ball. Why aren't we scoring a couple more goals just from, you know, a simple ball into the box from a corner or a free kick? And someone like Dier, who attacks the ball brilliantly, Alderweireld, another one, Kane, Sanchez, these are all players that should be dominating their potential opposite number.
Yeah, Sanchez's lack of goal threat has been quite surprising because I actually look quite lethal in the box, scoring overheads, headers. So I think that comes down to the quality of the ball going in the box.
Yeah, and clearly a lack of focus in training on that, which, you know, would come at the expense of other things. So perhaps we'd lose a bit of organisation. But like you say, there's so much upside there.
When Eriksen takes the corners, he zips the ball in flat, which is really good if you have a clever movement planned and you can get a person into that space first. But what we're talking about is dealing with the lofted ball with players who are really good in the air. So I think we've got a mismatch there in that we don't organise our corners. We've got good aerial targets, but we're zipping the ball in. And that's probably why it looks a little better when it's a different player taking those corners, or why Eriksen gets so much grief for it.
Yeah, like Lamella went through quite a purple patch of taking corners, where he has actually got quite a good delivery.
I long for a training ground routine. I do love a goal scored from a training ground routine set piece, and I wish we would do something. Imagine the handshakes if we did.
Kane scored one last season against Stoke, which was a nice variation of a corner.
Yeah, but
I think there's maybe been a couple this year which we've properly, royally fucked up.
Okay, we'll move on to some more questions about various different issues. Starting off with Bankrupt Spurs on Twitter, who says, could you discuss the evolution of our pressing during Poch's tenure? Feels to me like we don't do it with the same intensity as the first couple of years. Is this to avoid end-of-season burnout, a consequence of the switch to 3-5-2, or players not following orders, or another reason?
I think that it will... if you look at last season, when we had a brilliant run of games all through Christmas and towards the end of the season, even then our press looked a little subdued. And I think that was down to it being more organised, and we could achieve what we wanted to, which is to force the opposition to pass the ball to Wanyama with a lesser effort. So it was more efficient. If you combined an increased efficiency with also other reasons for it dropping off, such as a change of shape, a change of motivation, change of personnel, then it starts to look a little soft.
And I think it's fairly easy to sort of also say, actually, if Eriksen's not getting the rotation, then he can't press with the same intensity.
Yeah.
Likewise with Kane, likewise with Dele. And that's all going to have a slight impact. You just need that one player to set the tempo from the start. And if everyone's kind of feeling heavy-legged, it's very difficult to have that. We've seen already Lamella come on and tear around with his enthusiasm, and it lifts the other players.
Yeah, Wembley hasn't helped us either. I don't know if it's a cliche, but it's energy sapping. Maybe it's not the same kind of surface, and it has affected us there as well.
Mm. Yeah, I would agree. I think part of it is that we've slightly adjusted the way we play as well. So, you know, the idea has always been to force the opposition team to launch these long balls, hopeful long balls forward, and then we'd pick up the pieces. But we're more kind of pressing passing lanes now, I think, rather than individuals. When Poch first arrived, it felt like there was a kind of individual player press where we'd have our front four pressing their men, essentially, and then a fifth player backing up. I think that's kind of changed a little as he's evolved, and the 3-5-2 might be partly put in place to suit that changing style as well. A question from eSpurs India on Twitter. Was Winks just a purple patch? Bard, you have plenty to say on Winks.
No, Winks is a good player. And I think, unfortunately for him, he's been denied a partner in midfield with Dembele and Wanyama not being there. But my biggest problem with Winks, and this is something that he can overcome in time and through training and through learning about the game if he gets someone alongside him who can teach him, but I just think he lacks the passing ability to play in that role. I think we had you and Roberts on early on, maybe episode 2 or something, and he spoke about players passing and there being a metric for counting when you remove a player, so you pass over a player or through a player, and that becoming a stat. And it's quite often that Winks will not spread the ball quick enough under pressure and take opposition players out of the game. Against Dortmund and against Apoel, he hit crossfield passes, but there was no pressure on him. And it was quite easy to hit Aurier. But what he seems reluctant to do or unable to do is move it quickly, cut a player out of the game, and that way almost break the press instead of dribbling like Dembele would, but by doing that. Michael Cox wrote an article about Winks after our 1-1 draw at the Bernabeu, and he was praising Winks, and he spoke about his head movement, the way he took the ball, and he spun out of a tackle, moved away, and then hit a crossfield pass, and it went awry. And Winks has got the potential, and he's got the vision of it, but he just doesn't have the talent yet to be able to play the passes that we need him to play.
I don't agree. I think that he does have that passing ability, and he's demonstrated it. He might have had a little dip in form recently, and that's partly because he's played a lot of minutes. The reason he's played a lot of minutes is because he's become a starting member in a Champions League team. So I think that says more to his pro. The statistic is packing, by the way.
Packing.
The, okay. Yeah, I'm a bit iffy on that one, to be fair. But I do think Winks is a very good packer.
You see, I think Winks has become a starting player through lack of alternatives. I like Winks, and from the role he played last season, coming on to close games off, he's very clever, he's very intelligent in the way he plays, but I don't think his passing is good enough for him to command that central role. And we would need to upgrade that, or see an improvement with him, or help him by getting an alternative to him.
I tend to think that in Winks' role in the team, there's not such a need to be spraying diagonals. I think he's more there to link play going.
It's not so
much
diagonals, it's about just changing the angle of attack. He's plays so centrally that he's got the ability and the positional role to change the angle of the attack, and he does it very rarely. He quite often will play where he's looking, even though he's got great head movement and that kind of stuff.
Do you not feel that it's partly as a result of him playing as the deepest lying midfielder and he can't take so many risks?
There's been plenty of deeper lying midfielders in the history who have been excellent passers and been able to start attacks from deeper roles. That's part of being a register. You start games from there. You're able to start attacks and spring counters. And I don't think Winks isn't... I don't think he's springing many counters at all, actually.
I think that's part of the problem. I don't think he's suited to that role. I think he needs to be alongside the guy who sits there,
possibly.
And he'll be the one shuttling forward. And, you know, we've seen him kind of break free of challenges and then get his head up and play a nice, short, incisive mm-hmm. pass. And I think that's his game, where he's so technically adept. He's very good at getting the ball under control quickly and getting it out of his feet and passing quickly and swiftly, but, you know, generally it will be a short pass, often forward. I think he's given a lot of criticism for being a backwards and sideways player, partly again because he's playing that deeper lying role, and he's there to almost link the centre-back's passes in a way. He'll take the ball from one centre-back and give it to the other, which, as you say, changes the passing angle. And I think people then sort of see him as a backwards and sideways player when actually he's doing that for the good of the team.
Well, fair enough if we get another player to play that role and move him elsewhere, but currently, I don't think he's playing great in that position. Not to say he's a bad player, not to say that he doesn't have a future or potential at Tottenham, but I think he's struggling in that role, definitely.
I think we should disagree more. It makes for a much better conversation, doesn't it? Let's do this again next time. Last question this week from M13 Tull on Twitter. Does the panel like Poch's approach to big away games? For example, we are aggressive in the press and play out from the back. Having a philosophy is great, but if we don't perform in those games, players lose faith very quickly.
I mean, I thought the Man City game for about 17 minutes was one of the most interesting games of football I've seen for a while. I loved our approach. I thought we were brave. I thought we really went at them. It would have been very easy to pack the defence and do a Mourinho, try and stifle them. And I loved the way we approached the game. Unfortunately, we fell down because of individual errors, set pieces, and the fact that they are an immense football team. Whether or not we should have parked the bus, I don't know. I don't ever want to see Tottenham do that. We are to dare us to do without sounding like Mickey Hazard and banging the drum about Tottenham and stuff. I'd like us to try and beat teams. But sometimes you got to just stand up and realise the opposition have bigger guns than you.
I do feel there's a bit of a recency bias in that question, looking at the City game, and we're at risk of dating the podcast, but I looked in detail in this particular case at the City game, and I think that there are reasons as to why what he did, although it didn't pay off, was the right thing to do. And I also think if you look again at the Champions League games, those are games where we adapted our game and got results. So I wouldn't say that we do have a bad angle towards big games.
Yeah, I think the City game, there were reasons why things went wrong. One of them is that City are brilliant. The other one is that we were missing key defensive players and couldn't play our normal defensive game. But also, we did get into some good positions and play terrible passes or make bad decisions. Mm-hmm. Rose and Trippier were both early in the game in really inviting positions and completely messed up their final delivery. If one of those had been a really good pass and we'd scored a goal, the whole game could have been different, because we perhaps then might have played on the counter, because Poch has showed in this season that he can do that. He can sit deep and he can counter. So like you say, I think the question's a little unfair perhaps, and I don't want him to really have to change his philosophy. I think he's doing the right things for the right reasons. I just think we're a bit unlucky against City in many ways.
Yeah, I think the big away games, we look at the Man United game, we got Mourinho, classic Mourinho move. City game, we tried. The one that is a bit of a concern is the Arsenal game.
Yeah.
That the way we were so flat and the way we just didn't do anything against them, especially against a very weak Arsenal team. That's the only one that worries me.
Yeah, I think that's the one that we tried to play our own game, and we should maybe, and I don't like to, but maybe give an Arsenal just a little bit more respect and force them to have the ball.
Yeah.
Cool. So we move on to our further reading section, in which we tend to recommend articles, books, podcasts, that kind of thing. Have you guys read anything or listened to anything cool this week?
When Jack Pitbrook was on, he mentioned Mister by Rory Smith, which I bought then, but I'd have other books to read, Duncan Alexander's, Simon Cox's. So finally I got round to reading Mister by Rory Smith. And this is a brilliant, brilliant book. I can't tell you how good it is. It's well written in Rory Smith's style, and it's fascinating. It dates the way English managers have gone abroad from like the very start of football, how they the FA sent these English guys out to teach the world how to play football and then just forgot about them. So they sent guys to Spain, to Italy. You got the guy who created Barcelona. You got the guy who created football in Italy. And then when they came back to England to say, look, this is what I've done, give me a job, they were completely disregarded and left to die penniless out of their own country. And gradually it traced all these managers through the history. Obviously going to one which ties into Tottenham, Vic Buckingham, about his relationship with Arthur Rowe and Tottenham, about obviously his Ajax and Barcelona influences. And it's a beautiful book. I'm about 30, 40 pages from the end, and I'm now Terry Venables at Barcelona and Bobby Robson in Portugal. It's a brilliant book, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah, Rory Smith is a great writer, isn't he? Mm-hmm. I'm going to date the podcast one last time by recommending the Guardian long read on Manchester City. I think it's called City's Plan for Global Domination, which is on the sort of the City Financial Group, and it will sort of put things in perspective a little bit recently, and also looking at the league in general.
Yeah, I read that after the Tottenham Man City game, and that was an amazing read.
Editor of the Guardian long read is a Spurs fan and a good bloke, so yeah.
Nice. I've been listening to Aaron Wolf's podcast, First Time, Long Time, and I think I've mentioned it before, but I just wanted to mention it again because it's fantastic. And again, he's a Spurs fan, so there's a link there. Aaron's a really, really good guy. He's an amazing storyteller, and some of the podcasts have been about subjects which I have no idea about, and I've found them engaging from the minute they start and just quite emotional a lot of the time. He has a real knack. Not just the way with words, but the way he crafts the story and involves different people and researches. And I'd really highly recommend those series of podcasts. And he's someone that I'd love to get on this podcast at some point if he's ever in the country.
I'd also like to highlight Nathan's series of tweets on Edison's playing out of the back that he posted today, which are well worth a read through.
Cheers. Cheers, man. Yeah, episode 2 of The Fan, which is Aaron Wolf's podcast, is so good and about Spurs.
Yeah, it's great. Really, really great. Cool. So just last thing to say really is if you want to read more of Bardi and Nathan's content online, it's Bardi TFC and Nathan A. Clark, and I'm Windy Coys.
Yeah, I don't think my content will be as tactical as Nathan. A bit more emotional, but I do promise I will start blogging more this year.
And we'll be back next year with a new podcast feed. We're branching out, and we're already kind of branching out on Twitter as well. We're at the Extra Inch on Twitter now, if you want to follow. We'll tell you more about the podcast feed when it's live, but it's just a way to separate the two things. Big shout out to Cave. Thank you so much for having us once again at your beautiful studio, SNK. It's very much appreciated. Happy Christmas to one and all.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. Clock. It's the Fight In.
It's the Fight In. Clock. Oh, that was really interesting, mate, yeah.
I'm Robbie, the site manager. Everyone here knows me. But when they ask me, how was your weekend? They're surprised when I say, I'm getting paid, loading a helicopter on board a transport plane as an RAF reserve. I'm in charge of making sure it's loaded correctly. If it isn't, the plane can't fly. Knowing the pilot needs my okay before takeoff, that's a special feeling.
Make your spare time count with over 40 roles. Commit only 27 days a year. Search RAF Reserves.